Yeah, it's always better when we're together.
The following presentation is brought to you by Better Together, building better marriages and stronger families.
Tell you one thing, we're better together.
I am really excited to introduce to you our speakers today, Misty and Tony Chivorka. And first of all, I just want to say thank you for being here. I am always I'm impressed, I'm honored, highly respectful and appreciative of people who are willing to use their past experiences, their pain, their difficult circumstances for the benefit of others. You know, I think sometimes, and I see it a lot in the Christian culture, we have this tendency to want to pretend like everything is just great and fine, we never have any problems, and we sacrifice a sense of authenticity and realness and how God has moved and worked in our heart when we do that. So your willingness to share your story, to be vulnerable, is truly a blessing to us. Please welcome Tony and Misty Chivorka.
Our story starts way back in the 80s. We were high school sweethearts. We had met at church camp and just had the sweetest five-year romance long distance for the first couple of years. And then Tony was able to move to my hometown to attend college. And we adjusted to what that was like. You know, actually seeing your boyfriend, girlfriend daily or a couple times a week was a fun adjustment. And it was just a tremendous time of growing in our relationship and in our relationship with the Lord and just approaching whatever life was going to bring us. So we had dreams, plans, and quickly we were taken away from Terre Haute, which was my hometown. Tony's job took us to Dallas, Texas, the big city, and stretched us a lot. 20, 21 years old when we moved and learning to be independent. Again, just another layer of our foundation was laid. And then the job moved us again, and ultimately, after a couple of more moves, we found ourselves just down south in Louisville, Kentucky, and that was about 6 years into our marriage, and things started changing. I am a nurse, and the new location, I had to work nights. I'd never done that before, and that was difficult, managing that. But what had happened through a series of a few months was where we were to where we ended up was night and day. Our friendship, our closeness, our laughter, everything, we were worlds apart. The words isolation come to mind. It was a very, very dark time. I'll let you bring up speed there.
You know, Misty's right. It started out with that fairy tale type story of two young kids meeting at church camp and 15 and 16 years old and planning the future, and we had it all mapped out, and it was going to plan. It really was. And we did have a lot of career changes. I had a lot of advancements and opportunities, and you know, that's what any young man aspires to do. You know, you want to be a good husband, you want to be a good role model, you want to tackle and conquer the world, and that was what I was set out to do. And as we got to Louisville, Misty indicated, you know, some of the things changed, you know, as far as the way our work schedules would work. And Derek, you hit on something earlier that was right on. It's that intentionalness. We lost the intentional relationship. And so it became very much about, here's her work schedule, here's my work schedule. Our friends were different. What I focused on was about me. And it was about, how do I get to that next career level? Where do I go to that next move? And it was really nothing about our marriage or relationship. And before we knew it, we had complete separation. We were living in the same house, by that time, townhouse, but we were living in two different lives. And that led to various things within my life that Misty had no idea about. She thought she was just working away, doing the things that she was supposed to do as a young wife. And here I was, I had that stuff, my career, my dreams, and they weren't connected at all.
Yeah. So we had a four or five month period of just this complete darkness, and as a young woman, you have some intuition, you have, there's just something not right. and lots of prayer, lots of searching, and ultimately it was just, God, please bring my husband back. No matter what, just bring him back to me. And that led up to the night before Thanksgiving that year, and Tony came home from work and could see it in his face. I mean, there was just fear and dread. Knew that this was not a conversation he was wanting to have. And he walked into the kitchen and he looked at me and he leaned on the counter. Misty, I've had an affair and she's going to have a baby. And at that moment, it all shifted. It all changed. The dreams, the plans. But then there was also some relief to know that I wasn't going crazy, that there really was something going on. There was something between us. And this is a hard part of the story, that I'm a Christian woman, and it is something that is very special to me. And I hope I can convey this, and just you would know my heart. But I had gotten to a really low place in those few months, very, very desperate, and did a lot of wrestling and talking with the Lord about this. And I felt like he was preparing me for that moment. Because when Tony looked at me, the man whom I'd loved since I was 15 years old, and knew that he was broken, as he confessed this, there truly was a beat in my heart, and the next beat, it was filled with forgiveness. Didn't mean we didn't have stuff to work through. Didn't mean that it was like, oh, okay. But it was, that was, again, the new foundation, that if we had any hope, that forgiveness had to be the foundation of that. So as he confessed that, and I looked at him, and you know, of course, we were crying at that point, and he finally, through the conversation, he looked at me and says, do you want me to leave? And I said, no, although you broke your promise to me, I'm not going to break my vow to you. And because it's so obvious with all of you here today that marriage is special. And that is counter to everything the world tells people these days, that wedding, that really isn't a big deal. But it's that vow you make, that there really is an eternal covenant there. And that is what I was drawing on when I told him, no, I don't want you to leave. So then that night, and I want you to talk a little bit about this. It's a very long night.
Okay. You know, it's amazing. It's been many years since this has occurred. It's been, what, 12 years, roughly?
Yeah, 12 years.
And every time I hear her tell that part of the story, it does choke me up. And, you know, it's one of those things that I go back now and think, how in the world did I let my marriage, that let me as an individual get to that point where I would put her in that position. I mean, she literally thought she was going crazy. And that's not an understatement. She thought, what is wrong with me? And that intuition, ladies, that you have, it's real. It's real. Don't let someone tell you it's not. It's there. God gave it to you for a reason. And now I can look back, and of course I'm like, oh my. But, you know, I had become a person that I didn't know myself. I was so fixated, once again, on the stuff that I wanted, that I lost who I was. You know, I started going through, and as we prepared for this, I started thinking about the things that I had become. And the things that I had become during that period of my life was, I was a drunk. I never drank before, not like that. I grew up in a Christian home as well. I was a drunk. I was a liar. How in the world would you ever get to a position to have a relationship that you married, to be in marriage, to do all the things I was doing other than lying about it? Your actions, your intent, your deeds. I was a cheat. I was cheating on my relationship with her. I was cheating out on the relationships with my friends and family, which I would never have solved in that context, but now I do. And you start going through those things, and it's like, something has to give. And so leading up to this, the Lord was preparing Misty's heart for the message and the news that she was going to hear. I think the Lord was preparing my heart too, bringing these to the surface to say, I don't know what the answer is. I didn't know what the answer was. But you can't go on living like this any longer. And And so I took that, and when I came in that Thanksgiving night, I didn't have any idea how that conversation was going to go. I'd actually had it arranged with a buddy of mine, said, hey, look, I'm going to go tell my wife this is what's going on. Is it okay if I come crash your place? Because I can't imagine I'll be there tonight. I had worked out all those type of details because I knew that the relationship was going to be over. Why would anybody want to live in that relationship? And so when Misty came forward and she said, and I never will forget, and that's the piece that always chokes me up, you broke your vow to me. I've not broken my vow to you. And that's something that will always live within me. And that's that intentional commitment. You mentioned it. It could have been very easily. She said, I mean, I'm done. But she didn't do that. It was intentional. This is our marriage. We're going to work at this. And I've never forgotten that. And so we started working on it that night. And it was very rocky, as you can imagine. I mean, where do you start to rebuild trust? Where do you start to try to connect again? And how do you set boundaries? I mean, those are world issues because you can't live side to side every day of the hour, you know, every hour of the day. And you've got to start to build a place to start. And those are through boundaries and set some expectations early on and having some open communication. So do you want to talk?
Yeah. I think shifting now, where we found ourselves was, okay, where do we go from here? How do we pick up these pieces? And so I had prayed, like I said, before the confession, that no matter what. Well, God did bring him back. And so now it was, now where do we go from here? So we decided, no matter what, we're going to fight. We're going to fight for this. And so that night, we sat for hours talking and crying and talking and crying and talking and crying. And, you know, even the first few days, you know, it was still, well, let me back up. So we, a lot of talking. Some of the things that were very crucial for me that I want to share, that even Tony, in his state that he was in, first of all, God has made him a very wise man. And even though he was making some foolish decisions, there is wisdom in his being. And so even that night, he and very quickly set me free. Misty, this had nothing to do with you. Not the way you look. It's not about our intimacy. It's not about your bad cooking or anything. You know, there was nothing there. It was purely selfishness and where that was coming from in him. And so that freed me very quickly from the path I could have gone down. Was our marriage perfect? No. And am I? No. We're still not there. Working on it. But cooking's getting better. So he freed me from that. And dad was helpful. He said, you ask me anything. And at first, you know, he told me any sort of question I had. And it wasn't just that evening, but that set the table for us to know that if a thought would come or a question, I could ask him. But, you know, there was a boundary there where I knew that the best I could to keep the relationship healthy was not to come at it more fact-hunting, I guess would be the way. Just like, I need to know this. This is what I'm dealing with. These are some thoughts or these emotions. Can you answer these questions for me? Now, that's not to say that every conversation was like that.
Do you remember the one in the bathroom? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of a beating of the chest, the how could you. This was days, weeks later. Just the ebb and flow of it all. You know, there was great hope, and then there was, again, repeat of the devastation. And, you know, we had a very... to make some decisions very quickly, just as far as where, like physically, what do we do from here? And the funny thing is that even during those last few weeks, his old job had been, hey, we'd love to have you come back, because we originally had lived here. And so we looked at each other and we were like, we've got to get back. We had a wonderful church. We had a wonderful support system, good friends, people that are Christians and believers would walk alongside of us. We knew they wouldn't abandon us. And we knew that that was going to be critical to the healing of our relationship. And so that opportunity came. And so we had to decide to move and those type of things. But another thing that we kind of set up that night is that doing daily devotions, and that's something we've never had really done up until that point. I mean, you know, we attended church faithfully, and God was very much an active part of our life and daily conversations, but the true intention of sitting down with the book, and we had found, I think it had been given to us, or I ran to the bookstore, and it was called Night Lights by James Dobson. And they're just like one page, and it wasn't even for marriages in crisis, but I bought it. Or had it. And so we committed to every day we were going to sit down and go through this. And with the job change, he started traveling again. And so that threw a whole, you know, wrench in that system and rebuilding of the trust. And so he would often take the book with him, and then he'd call me each evening and we'd do it over the phone. And the great thing about that book is that it really caused us to talk about things, not only about the affair, but things we had never dealt with. And it was just great. So not only were we rebuilding, but we were rebuilding something even better and stronger. As far as setting boundaries with the traveling piece, it was really, Tony was very diligent about, you know, this is my schedule, and this is where I'm at, and then like after the meetings are done, you know, this is where I'm going to be, and would often call, and would allow me, you know, I'm feeling a little unsure, and he was always very willing. He was hurt. And he was broken. He was more sad that he had to do that, because unfortunately it was a reminder. But yet he was very generous to tend to that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've learned, and I don't know if others have gone through a period in your life where you've been the person to break trust. But one of the things I had learned to do was I lost some rights. I did. They are now deferred to her. And when she feels like I get those rights back, this is part of my part of trying to build the trust, then she'll let me know that it is. So that means I have to be open to any questions she has. That can be painful. I mean, who wants to ask and answer, you know, was it just physical? You know, was it more than that? Well, am I not pretty enough? I mean, and you can do some canned answers. Come on, guys. I mean, you know, sometimes the lady gets dressed. How do I look? Oh, you look fine. That doesn't cut it. You've got to have really thoughtful answers. And that's hard to do, especially for guys, because guys aren't used to really getting to that level of verbalization. But what I have learned too, though, is that she gets to ask those. She also gets to respond how she wants to respond to those answers, which means that you may not like what she has to respond to. The one thing that we had to work on was, too, is, yes, I lost some rights in that. I had to build the trust. I had to prove and commit to her and show her that I'm committed to the relationship. The other thing that I think we spent some time on, too, is she has to be willing to let me ask questions. Because there was a reason. Now, there could be a whole litany of things of why the relationship got the way it is. But we all know that it's not always just a one-side trip. There's something there's a connection somewhere that's lost. And maybe one individual drove it to a more extreme to the other. But we had some intimate conversations about, you know what, that's a no matter what. So if we're really going to have a no matter what conversation, that means I get to bring up some stuff too, that no matter what, you're going to commit to work through this together with me and make sure that we're on the same page. And so that was a lot of learning for us both to do, and we're still doing it. This isn't like these are things that happen in the first 6 months and, oh, you're done. This is a lifelong journey. And it's a commitment to trying to be intentional about that relationship, trying to continue to build those connections. And, you know, there'll be times and days where there's a memory that resurfaces or there's a conversation that occurs. And you're challenged to bring it back home, to remember that this is about your guys' relationship to be the best that it can be. You got to answer those questions. You got to be transparent with the answers. This is supposed to be your best friend, right? This is supposed to be the person who you're sharing your life with. And a lot of times when you go through life, if you're not challenged with complexities, you can create little compartments. And well, this is that not that important, and this is important. To get to the level of trust where we got to get to, it all had to be on the table. And that's hard to do sometimes. You know, one of the things that as far as picking up the pieces is kind of how I looked at this, putting boundaries together, picking the pieces. For me personally, one of the things that I struggled early on with is there's a lot of guilt. you know, the confession, in hindsight, the confession was the easy part. You know, I built everything up that, well, I've got to tell her what's going on, I've got to tell her what's going on. And I really made that, which was a big deal, but I really made that the deal. That's the easy part. It's what you do afterwards that defines who you are, what you're going to commit to. How true are you really going to be to this individual? Are you really going to now do what you said you're going to do? Because you didn't do it the first time. And you've got to deal with all that guilt. And there's pain that comes along with that. You'll feel like a failure. I know I felt like a failure. There are days today I feel like a failure sometimes. And I have to remind myself, that died. That's gone. This is who I am now. But it isn't a one-time deal. You can't just do it and think it's all good. It's something you've got to work at. And so putting those boundaries together, she talked about being intentional with her actions, making sure on the same page, it's little by little, day by day, you start to build a trust back.
Yeah. One of the things I had mentioned that we would talk about today is, what does forgiveness look like? And that is a subject that's difficult to navigate. But one of the things, and obviously there's this whole other conversation we could have about this child. And let me just fill in the blanks really quick. Isaac is about as tall as I am, and he is the love of my life. He is just a very special young man. We share him with his mom and stepdad, and that's just a whole other miracle, and God's not done working there. We're so excited. But, so I don't want to just pretend like that part didn't happen, because that is a very big part in the whole forgiveness thing is, you know, now there's this whole other piece. So exercising forgiveness when there's still this daily evidence of what had happened. And, you know, that's a little tightrope that we've learned to walk. But I think one of the things is, of course, remembering I have been forgiven of the same. You know, what I have required forgiveness from my Savior is the same. And so I have to extend that to Him. And so it started, you know, with the healthy conversations. I could ask the questions. And so instead of maybe holding it over his head, it would just be, I'm going to talk about it. And the thing that I have often said, or have been quoted as saying, is that you choose what you dwell on. And I think that is where I have found myself at many crossroads, anything from when we have to pay the support check, or when, you know, any sort of thing as relates to this, our marriage, is I have to choose, do I stand there and choose and think about what he did and how it hurt, this, that, and the other, or can I choose to focus on what we've been brought out of and what the gift that we've been given? And so that is how I just choose not to let the bitter root take hold in my heart.
You know, one of the things that we've talked about is, what if there was no Isaac? That's the child we're talking about. What if there's no Isaac? You know, the interesting thing about that is that if there's no Isaac, I'm not so sure if we'd have the same story. I'm not so sure if we would be sharing the story. There's too many things, especially in the Christian walk, or just in the relationships itself. Things occur, and if it's easy enough just to put it in the closet or sweep underneath the rug, you just kind of march on and try to deal with it. Well, I don't know why God chose us in this manner. And what I mean by that, I'm not sure why He chose us to have Isaac. Other than to say that He knew that something good could be made out of this. With Isaac, there's a force of recognition. There's a reconciliation. You do have this individual. And he is an incredible individual. But without him, I'm not sure if we'd have the same story. So I'm thankful for that. As much as I can look about my actions and be upset about those, I'm more thankful that I have Isaac in our lives, and that we can be blessed to have him there. And, you know, as far as new beginnings, I know that our story is not everybody's story. And I wish it was. I know it's not. But what I do know is that if you have two people that are trying to make it right, and you're verbalizing, you're intentional about the relationship, I want to believe there's good that will come out of it. There's no guarantees in anything, but I want to believe that. With the right purpose and the right commitment, that things can move down the road. You know, for me, I am so thankful that today, am I still career-driven? Absolutely. I'm a guy. I want to drive. I'm a type A guy. I'm very, very competitive, as some people know. As my friend Kim will tell me. She once told me, side story, Tony, you are very complicated. And I responded back and said, I'm not complicated, I'm just complex. There's a difference. And so I'm still very career focused, but I'm also very, very focused. And what's at the top of my list is my wife now, my three kids, Isaac, Lydia, and Mara. That's what I'm focused on. Those are my pillars. That when everything else fades away, and the material things, the stuff that selfishness, the pride that got me off the focus early on, when those are all gone, I've got the pillars that support me. And that's what I'm most thankful for, most blessed about. And we're not done. We still have work to do. And I hope that you guys see that there's hope and there's commitment from both parties to get it done, that you can move it down the road, as I like to say. You can move the needle in the relationship, make it stronger and better. So I at this point, you know, we'd love to take any questions if you'd like to have some questions from us, and we'll do our best to answer them.
How might it have been different if one or the other was not committed? I mean, have you thought that? I'm sure you talked that through before.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go ahead.
I volunteer in a ministry where I get to go to women's conferences and share the story, and the speaker is very mindful to say, you know, I understand that, like he said, this is not everyone's story, because he was willing. There was something in my spirit that knew that night that if I let him leave, if I said, no, you need to leave, that was the first step towards a final separation. But him being willing, even wavering at times, but still leaning towards willingness, that is crucial.
This is for the night. When he told you the devastating news, you seemed to me, when I listened, you were very quick to say, oh, I forgive you. Did you later, perhaps, immediately after you said that, did you second-guess yourself and wonder, does he want to be forgiven? Because I know, because I've heard similar stories, and the man may tell the wife, especially if there's a case of a child, and the wife will find out, so he may as well tell the wife now, that he has no intentions of changing his behavior. Perhaps he's a sex addict, and he cannot stop it.
Yeah.
So did any of those second guesses ever come up in time?
Yes, but it was because we were fighting so hard that even if I think there's a difference between forgiveness and then being angry and hurt and betrayed and feeling helpless. And I think in my mind there was a separation in that. The forgiveness meant, you know, that is no longer a debt you owe me, for lack of better words.
But in all those asked of her, right? From my perspective, how it was demonstrated.
From the wife's perspective. Yeah. Because I heard of similar cases, and the wife said, oh, I forgive you. Mm-hmm. But then the husband continues, mm-hmm. because he needs other help.
Yeah.
Maybe he feels horrible that he is, quote, acting out in his behavior of affairs, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then I've heard cases where the wife later found out that this was not just her saying the words to the husband, I forgive you, but maybe they needed help in a different way.
Yeah.
It was really through the boundaries that were set. I mean, she said it right, is that there was the forgiveness. Trust me, all the other things that went with it was still there. I mean, that betrayal, the hurt, the how could you, doesn't mean I don't forgive you. And that's why I think the boundaries are so important for us, because I had to show a level of commitment and demonstration that I wasn't. She wouldn't have put up with that if I wasn't. I mean, that was part of the initial conversations we had, that if we're going to go forward, there has to be immediate change. You know, part of the story we didn't get into, that immediate change was, we are moving. You are going to change your career. And I remember, that was what I was there to do. I gave that job up. We moved because that was the importance to her. It was important to us. And that was all part of demonstrating. But it was the boundaries you said, I think, was the proof that.
Yeah. If the story had been different, if there had been a repeated pattern, I don't know what forgiveness would look like. I thank God I have never had to experience that.
Thank you.
As Isaac aged, how did you describe or communicate the dynamic of the families to him and his origins and the relationship you all have?
Well, that's an interesting point. We're in the process of getting there. So right now, Isaac has lived in two separate families. And so that's what he's grown up in. His younger sister, Isaac's the typical boy. I try to talk birds and bees with Isaac, and it, you know, he shut me down. This type of conversation, he maturity-wise, he just isn't there. But we're starting to try to lay that groundwork. His sister, who's 11, she already knows it all. And so I'm
because
praying.
Because she asked.
Because she asked, yeah. She figured it out. Kind
of like this.
Why?
So, like, what, you know, I mean, like, up in our face. Yeah. So she knows.
So we know the time's coming. And at this point, we're laying down prayer that God will give me wisdom. I think that's absolutely my responsibility, that God will give me wisdom to say the right things, that support him. You know, that's one of the things I have. Fearful might be too strong of a description, but I am fearful of that conversation, but I'm trusting that the groundwork's being laid.
When Lydia started, the inquisitive one, was asking all of these questions, you know, I can only imagine from a daddy's perspective, his fear of what his little girls, and, you know, ultimately Isaac, what they're going to think of him. And you know, Lydia just would, so matter of fact, like often kids are, just like, well, I'm glad he stayed. Yes, me too, honey. Or you wouldn't be here. And then as she and Daddy were sitting at the dinner table talking about it one night, just, you know, kind of nonchalantly, you know, he very quickly looked her in the eyes and said, you know, we're going to learn a lot from the choices Daddy made. You know, not just about staying faithful to your marriage, but just the generalities, but the truth. And I'm so thankful that he is we are using it for the next generation to teach and to learn.
It has been a challenge for you going through this process relating to Isaac's biological mother and that dynamic?
It is the funniest thing. When, like I said, I am a nurse, and the first time we met Isaac and his mother, Chris, was just a few days after he was born. And, you know, God has a way of kind of just setting the stage for raw honesty. Essentially, I went into a room upon request to show her how to use a breast pump. I mean, so it was the two of us, her in the most vulnerable position, you know, but she reached across to me and said, I am so sorry I did this. I'm so sorry. And that was a gift to me. I mean, I'm so thankful she did that. And our response was, my response was, you know, we have this great gift of Isaac now. It is all about him. It is all about raising him to be a wonderful young man who is loved by all of us. We have had a great relationship. She's the type of girl that I, after we left that house today, I said, she's someone I could have been like best friends with. And so we enjoy a good relationship, but there are moments where I have to kind of just choose to kind of maybe let things go and things like that. But he has, from the very beginning, set wonderful boundaries there. I mean, just very loving to me, very physically demonstrative when we are in her presence. I mean, especially early on, you know, now it's not that big of a deal, but just made me feel very secure. But I enjoy getting to do this with her.
I'm curious. Well, for my husband, actually, I wanted to tell you that I admired what you said about how you lost some rights. That's big stuff, because it would be easy to dig your heels in and go, well, you're not going to tell me what to do. Just get over it. So your humility is admirable. But I'm curious, what kind of boundaries did you put in place?
Well, there was a couple different things. You know, with me, one of the things was I had boundaries around my friends. When we moved from Indianapolis to Louisville, I had a really good core support team here in Indianapolis with good Christian guys. When I went to Louisville, I didn't have any. And so I made friends either through the work or through other acquaintances, you know, playing in the softball league or something. And so one of some of the boundaries was, I had to put boundaries, one, around who I hung out with, number one. Put boundaries around the time away from her. And so in other words, we wouldn't have date nights. We wouldn't have committed time to spend together. And so the boundaries was, that is going to be within bounds. You've got to do that. You cannot do what you've been doing. Third was the family side. You know, I actually moved to Louisville because that's where I'm originally from, is that area. Louisville, not Louisville. Moved to Louisville because that's where I'm from. That's where my family's from. And quite frankly, I was the closest to my family physically since college, but yet the furthest away from the emotions, from being that emotional connection, this bizarre state. And so one of the boundaries, I had to get back to my family too. And then from a work-life balance, you set the schedules. It would not be unusual for me to go in at 7 and come home at 10. And a lot of times that was legitimate working. But sometimes it wasn't early on. And so some of the boundaries was, I'm going to be home for dinner, period. 6 o'clock, the work can wait. I don't really care who it is. And so it's those type of boundaries and commitments. Go ahead.
One that he said for me is, you will never work nights again. And I appreciated that authority from him, knowing that that was so crucial. It's obvious.
And so it's really the simple things that you don't think of is what needed to be put in place that we got away from, and it lets all sorts of other stuff fill that space. And you probably heard that, if you leave open space, something will fill it. Mm-hmm. And so we were more intentional about what we're filling up with each other, with our friends, with support groups, with our church. And then as far as my work schedule, that she knew exactly where I was going, what I was doing, that I was home by dinner when I was in town. If I was on the road, I was calling. We were having conversations. And there's other things. You know, men, when you travel, there's things that you ought to be doing when you go in that hotel room that's disabling, the TV, the movie channels. I mean, there's things that you can do to have the front desk turn off, because it can get awfully lonely there if you're sitting there by yourself. And so just you call them down and say, I want you to turn this off for me. They will. So there's stuff like that. And it's a list of things.
I want to add one quick thing, because I have a feeling in this room, you guys have an opportunity. Our immediate family and our church family were crucial in the rebuilding and the flourishing of our marriage and our family. Our parents chose to forgive and to love and to support. Our church family, we were very hesitant. Sometimes it's not really nice in the church when there's kind of some ugliness and, everything's not perfect. And we weren't that way. We weren't that way anymore, or before, after, whatever. But now we've got this child, and they took him in and threw a baby shower. You wouldn't have. It is crucial, and I charge you today, if you are found in that position, love.
Just a logistical question. Did the mother and the child move too? Or
no.
Nope. So logistics can get a little tough.
Yeah.
And so they live in New Albany, which is right across the river from Louisville, about 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. Logistically, we connect. If we had all afternoon, we could tell about all the grace that's been given, all the miracles that are out there. Mm-hmm. But one example on the logistics. We have been truly blessed, and I believe Isaac has been truly blessed. Since Isaac was born, and when his mom went back to work, my mother has been watching Isaac.
So all of his baby years were in the home that Tony grew up in.
And so it's those type of things that really make this story amazing. And so on the logistics, we've got to figure out every other weekend, and coming up on Friday, getting home on Sunday, and spending weeks with us on vacations or in the summers. We just have to make it work, and there's sacrifices made, anybody that knows me, I can't travel more than a half an hour in the car, and I start getting really antsy and frustrated. It's a little fidgety, but there's nothing like going down and back to Louisville in one day, just because that's my responsibility as a dad. I mean, I've got to do that, and so this is things you've got to commit to.
I just want to, not really a question, but just applaud you for fighting for your marriage.
Behind you, sir.
This one's for you. After such an event, when you get into an argument or a debate or something, now, what makes you whatever, and how do you not use that event as your ammo in your argument?
Well, can I say we don't argue? No, I'm kidding. Because we have had more life after that than we had experienced before that, meaning my husband for almost 13 years has proven his faithfulness. He, our relationship is solid and all of these wonderful things, more so than it was even before that. And the pain has been taken away. The pain has been taken away. So there's no sense bringing it up because it's who we are in a good way.
Probably today, more than anything, what it is, it's her coaching me on my guilt. Mm-hmm. Because even though I've been forgiven, you know, that's something that I've yet to really totally forgive myself of. And so that's probably more of the issue than her ever bringing that up in a discussion. It's me being totally free of what I did.
One more question.
I just want to state that when she forgave, she gave up the right to punishment. She gave up rights too. And to me, this is more a story about submission to God and your humility. And he humbled himself so that you can have a relationship. And you humbled yourself to God's design for marriage and had faith in that so that, you know, you could be better after.
Yeah. That very night, we decided for moments and days like this that we were going to fight so that God could give the glory. And so thank you, guys, for letting us come. And I hope we didn't say anything that was, like, theologically incorrect.
I won't tell you what church we do.
Tell you one thing, we're better together.